It's Central Time. I'm Dean Knetter, in today for Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Over 40 million Americans suffer from migraines. About three-fourths of those are women. Migraines aren't just a headache. They're a neurological disorder with other symptoms like nausea and vomiting, light, sound, and smell sensitivity, in addition to the head pain that can last anywhere from several hours to several days. In recent years, we've made major advances in migraine treatment, including new drugs and wearable devices. In spite of those advances, though, the majority of people who have migraines never seek proper diagnosis and treatment. We're talking about the gap between migraine research and people's lived experience, and we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you suffer from migraines? Have you been able to get that official diagnosis and treatment? Have you found a treatment that works for you, that makes you feel better? How have migraines affected your daily life? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Marina Corin is a staff writer at The Atlantic. Her recent piece is titled, "It's the Best Time in History to Have a Migraine, So Why Doesn't It Feel That Way?" Marina, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Dean. Thanks for having me.
Well, as I just mentioned, a migraine is a lot more than a run-of-the-mill headache, and that's not a surprise to anyone who's had this, including yourself. Can you start us off by just talking about some of the big ways these can differ from normal headaches and just how bad it can get?
That's right. Yeah, migraines are way more complicated than just a simple headache. Definitely there is headache pain, often throbbing pain in one side of the head, but then you also have symptoms like nausea, vomiting, sensitivity to light and noise. And as you said earlier, these symptoms can last for hours or days. And then there is something called the migraine hangover, which is exactly what it sounds like. After the worst symptoms have passed, some migraine sufferers can feel fatigue, they have trouble concentrating, and they experience dizziness. So the experts that I talked to for this story, they all referred to migraines as attacks. And I'd never thought to call them by that, even though I've had migraines for years. But what an accurate term to describe the experience of a migraine.
And it sounds like, based on surveys and research, that it can have a real impact on people's lives, personally, professionally. What did you find out?
Yeah, migraine is a condition that really affects every part of your daily life, right? You know, if you have a migraine and you have to go pick up your kid at school, that's going to be harder than on a non-migraine day, right? So people who have migraines, you know, they'll cancel plans and feel guilty about it. They'll struggle to parent. They'll call in sick to work if they can. And if they can't, then they'll move through the workday like zombies. And research has shown that migraine is, one of the reasons that people are just kind of coasting at work sometimes and not really fully there. It's because they're working through something like migraine. So it really can affect every aspect of life and, you know, take a couple days away from you per month if you have something called episodic migraine. But if you have chronic migraine, you're looking at, you know, 15 or more days of the month where you are really struggling through these symptoms.
And as it stands right now, do we know what exactly is happening in the brain and in the body during a migraine?
Yeah, that is an interesting question. I remember when I was getting into the final edits of this piece, I was running the language of, you know, some of the really nitty gritty stuff about how this works past my sources, the researchers. And they said, yeah, that's close enough. That's as best as we can get, right? Because the exact cause of migraine is still a mystery, but scientists and researchers are getting closer to understanding the pathways that are involved. So years ago, migraines were thought to be a vascular disorder, that there was something happening in the blood flow in the brain and changes in that blood flow that would then contribute to migraine symptoms. Definitely that plays a role in an attack, but now scientists understand that the chaos actually comes from within the nervous system. And so the best understanding right now is that there is this nerve that provides sensation to the face, and something happens to stimulate that nerve, which then triggers cells in the brain to release neurotransmitters that then produce headache pain. How the other symptoms of migraines arise, that's a bit more mysterious. But it is definitely understood today as a nervous system issue, as a neurological disorder.
And from reading your piece, I learned that maybe at first migraine was seen as a distinct category of disorder that needed its own research, and then it kind of got lumped in with a lot of other things, and a stigma arose around it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Definitely. Yeah. There has been some research done that, in medieval times, for example, in classical times, migraines, as you said, were considered to be a serious disorder that required, serious focus and study. And then something happened in the 18th century when medical professionals decided to lump migraines together in with other nervous disorders, such as hysteria, which, of course, was, a pseudo scientific disease that was diagnosed in women who were seen as, over emotional, overexcited, or oversensitive. And so there was an association established between migraines and women. And that association really persisted. Some of the experts I talked to for this story said that, one in particular, when he began his training, his medical training in the 1960s, nobody really talked about migraines. And if they did, physicians still believed that migraines were the disorder of neurotic women.
And we are talking with Marina Corin right now, staff writer at The Atlantic, about migraine research and treatment. We've made a lot of strides, but not everyone is getting connected with that treatment. And Marina, one of the things that really surprised me is that out of the people that report having regular migraine, the majority of them have not sought official treatment or diagnosis. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, and I've had to reckon with my reasoning for not seeking out enough medical treatment for this condition. Again, which I didn't really think of as a condition personally. I've had migraines now for about a decade. And before that, as a teenager and as a child, I had childhood epilepsy. And for whatever reason, that vanished around my late teens. And I never quite got an explanation for why I had seizures, but then the migraines started. And I kind of accepted those as just a fact of my slightly broken brain, right? A fact of my existence. And the researchers I spoke with for this story say that a lot of people feel the same way about their migraines. They normalize them. They see them as something that they can handle on their own and maybe doesn't require real medical intervention. Of course, some people who don't seek care are just not able to because they may not be able to afford migraine drugs. They may not have health insurance that can cover their treatment. And there are, other more systemic issues. For example, there are just not that many migraine experts out there. Migraine doctors that really know a lot about the latest treatment, the latest remedies, and the physicians that are out there, they are quite concentrated in major metropolitan areas in the United States. So you're leaving, huge parts of rural America without doctors that really understand this condition and what can be done for it.
Let's go to our phones right now at 800-642-1234. We have Lisa with us in Madison. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, I'm just wondering if there's any other treatment for pregnant women. In the early 2000s, both of my pregnancies, I'd had migraines before, and I got them during the pregnancies. I would lay around for days. Some of them were severe enough, though, that I was throwing up, and then I'd have to go into the ER and because I was getting dehydrated, and they would have to give me a shot of morphine. So I wonder if there's anything else out there now for pregnant women.
Lisa, thanks for calling in and sharing your experience. Marina, is there anything that you ran into in your reporting regarding complications during pregnancies?
Yeah, I mean, well, first off, Lisa, I'm so sorry that that happened to you. I'm with you. One thing I've learned through doing the story is that there's a lot of us out there, and solidarity is key when you're a migraine sufferer. I mean, this is a great question, and I wish I had a better answer. I didn't dive too deeply into potential treatments for people who are pregnant. But, one thing that is clear, migraine is a type of threshold disorder. And some people just have a lower threshold for getting these attacks. And what prompts them are triggers. And unfortunately, one trigger for migraine is simply having a uterus, right? Being a person who ovulates, who can give birth, who menstruates. And so I think there's probably a lot more that can be done for pregnant women and pregnant people. I would love to do a bit more digging and get back to Lisa on that.
Lisa, thanks for the call. And Marina, Lisa also mentioned to our producer that she was told not to use triptans during pregnancy to treat migraines. Can you talk a little bit about those drugs and how what they can do?
Yeah, so triptans are a class of drugs that were introduced in the 1990s, and they were much more effective and faster at easing migraine pain than earlier drugs had been. But triptans don't necessarily work for everyone, and that's another tricky aspect of migraine treatment. The experts I spoke with said that one of the things that really frustrates them is that one type of medication, one type of treatment plan might work beautifully for one patient, but not at all for another. And that is a huge mystery for doctors. They don't know exactly why that happens. So I'm not sure what it is about triptans that maybe it's best if people who are pregnant are not using them. But it is true that, you know, that there is a gap in what physicians call precision medicine here. There are a lot of mysteries about which drugs will work, which won't. And if they do work, sometimes the effects fade away and drugs will just simply stop working for migraine sufferers and doctors don't know why.
Marina Corin is a staff writer at The Atlantic. We're talking with her about her recent article, It's the Best Time in History to Have a Migraine, So Why Doesn't It Feel That Way? You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you suffer from migraines, how has it affected your life, your work? Have you found a treatment that works? Let us know at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kinetter. Right now, we're picking up the talk with Atlantic staff writer Marina Corin. She recently wrote about migraine research and treatment. We know a lot more than we used to, but a lot of people aren't getting connected to those treatments. And Marina, before we go back to our callers, I want to talk about those new treatments. You say the last 5 years, we made huge strides. You compared it to the 1990s all over again in your article. What are some of the new treatments out there that we're seeing?
That's right. So the reason that things are kind of great in the research field right now is because at long last, you know, after decades and centuries of suffering, because people have had migraines for as long as we've had brains, researchers were able to use advanced brain scan and imaging techniques to really understand what was happening in the brain. Of course, they can't really say why, but at least they can see which parts of the brain light up during a migraine attack. And so they were able to use that information to inform new medications that targeted the regulation of neurotransmitters, specifically one called CGRP, which is known to spike during attacks. And so these new medications have been shown to be effective at cutting migraine days, easing symptoms, whether it's in the moment or beforehand. One of the more exciting treatments is an infusion, an injection type of medication that you can take, and it is supposed to be preventative, right? And reduce the number of migraine days you have per month. So in the beginning, people would usually, in the midst of an attack, take a triptan, for example, and hope that it kicked in. Whereas now there's a lot more preventative treatments that really target the neurotransmitters that people are now really understanding to be involved in migraine attacks.
We have full phone lines, so let's go to our callers right now. We have Todd with us in the UP of Michigan. Hey, Todd.
Hello.
What do you want to bring up?
Well, that one important treatment for chronic headaches and whatever is to stop taking proton pump inhibitors like Prilosec and Nexium, which cause damage to every organ system, and interfere with myelinization of the nerve cells, the coatings on the nerve cells. Lower stomach acid means lower vitamin B12, which means you're not, which interferes, which are important for myelinization. So I based this on 45 years of proton pump inhibitors and chronic migraines. And
Todd, thanks for the call. Marina, I'm sure every medication is going to affect people differently, but as you're determining a treatment for migraine, I'd imagine that taking into account other medications you are prescribed for might be difficult.
That's right. Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I imagine there's quite a bit of you look into drug interactions and what drugs might be making things worse for you or better. And, you know, one thing that I kept coming across in my research for this story is just how, for example, I take Excedrin for my migraines and have for a long time. And lots of people, I think, also take a lot of over-the-counter medications to treat their migraine symptoms. And it turns out that if you overuse them and they might actually backfire and make your migraine headache pain even worse. And after hearing that, it seemed kind of obvious. But before that, I was always reaching for the Excedrin, thinking it would be making me better and not realizing that it could actually be prolonging my suffering. So there's a lot of discussion to be had with your physician if you're able to see one about what is actually working and what's not.
Todd, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Ruth in Ladysmith. Hi, Ruth.
I was wondering, have you found any correlation with artificial sweeteners? For me, aspartame triggers headaches, and I was told aspartame causes a lot of allergic reactions, and one of the first signs of allergic reaction is a headache.
Gotcha,
So.
Ruth. Thank you for the call. Marina, I don't think you wrote about artificial sweeteners, but sugar and chocolate did show up in your writing.
Yeah, this is a great question, right? So much about managing migraines is, you know, the advice that people with migraine get is to lead a healthier lifestyle. And they're usually, if you just Google, like, how do I reduce migraines? You'll get a list from a bunch of reputable institutions telling you all the things you have to avoid. And sweeteners, artificial sugars, chocolate, all of that shows up. What's interesting, though, is some of the researchers I talked to said that, you know, they are still trying to understand exactly how triggers work and whether triggers that we believe to be triggers of migraine are actually triggers. For example, one of the researchers I spoke with said that MSG, the common food additive, probably doesn't actually induce migraines, even though it shows up on a lot of these lists as a food trigger. And there is some research showing that sometimes before the true awful symptoms of a migraine have come on, you are already in that migraine phase. You know, the gears are already moving forward in your brain, and you might reach for a bar of chocolate and think, oh no, this is going to give me a migraine. And when it does, you blame the bar of chocolate. But actually, a symptom of a pre-migraine phase is food cravings. So researchers are currently exploring whether the fact that, you know, you're craving chocolate and eating chocolate with those artificial sweeteners in it, they're trying to find out whether the migraine actually made you do that and not, you know, maybe that wasn't the trigger and something else was. That's another tricky part about having a migraine. It's never just one trigger that brings one on. It could be, you know, poor night's sleep from the night before or from 2 nights before. So it's all kind of messy.
Thanks for the call, Ruth. Let's go to Margaret next in Whitewater. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. Yes, I have a solution that's helped me with every single migraine I've ever had. And I started getting migraines at age 14, around my menstrual period. So anyway, I went to a doctor in Boston when I was in my 20s. And he said, and I also got the auras and, you know, flashing lights and things like that. He said, when you get the aura, change your blood flow by doing any kind of intense exercise. This has to be really intense for about 20 minutes. Walking won't work, but running, swimming. So I tried it, and once with a swimming pool, jumped in right when the aura came, and within 20 minutes, it was completely gone, no side effects. I've done running. Now, when it's bad weather in Wisconsin, I do a stationary bike. And once I break a sweat and I guess the blood flow has changed, it completely goes away. So that doctor is the only doctor who's ever told me that, but it's been like a miracle for me. So I
Wow.
just wanted to say that. Yeah.
Wow, Margaret, thanks for sharing, and I'm glad you found something that works for you. Marina, it seems like there are a lot of different solutions out there. Some work for some, maybe not for others. What do you think?
Yeah, no, that's such an interesting story. And I wonder, right, if her symptoms went away because it did have something to do with you know, blood flow in vessels in the brain. As I said before, migraine is not strictly a vascular disorder, but the way that the blood moves around is it does contribute to headache pain. And so some of the medications that are out there, including triptans, they work to constrict blood vessels that are inflamed to try to ease symptoms that way. So maybe extreme exercise also has some type of similar effect. But what I love most about all these listener calls is everyone sharing their very individual stories for what works for them. And that's really what I found in my research for this story is that people try all kinds of different things. I know of a friend of mine who shotguns a can of Coke when she feels a migraine coming on. And that works for her to chug that soda. Migraine treatment, you know, whether you are popping Excedrin or shotgunning Cokes, or you are taking triptans or some of these CGRP infusions, there are lots of different options. I would recommend that everyone go see a specialist if they can, if they're really struggling with this. But if something is working for you, it's working for you. And as long as it's not harmful in other ways, stick with it because migraines are miserable.
And Marina, I think we'll have to leave it there. There's a lot left to talk about, but I really appreciate you taking the time and joining us today.
Of course, anytime. I'm wishing all your listeners many migraine-free days.
Marina Corin is a staff writer at The Atlantic. She talked with us about her latest article, It's the Best Time in History to Have a Migraine, So Why Doesn't It Feel That Way? Looking at strides we've made in migraine research and treatment. Not all of those treatments have made it down to the majority of migraine sufferers, though. A reminder that if you want to listen back to this conversation, share it with a friend, or find any of our past shows, you can search the Ideas Network program archives at WPR.org. You can also stream both of our networks live there or on the WPR app and stay current with the latest coverage from our news department. I'm Dean Kinetter in today for Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.